when a person discovers more about Torah, suddenly you discover a huge learning curve in living as a Jew day by day with things that come very, very frequently. And a person will start to think, wait a second, I really don't know that much about Shabbos. I see these huge fat books, and today's Tuesday. What am I supposed to do? Right? It's coming, and it's going to be coming every week for the rest of my life. I gotta get up to speed on that stuff. And then there's stuff that's every day, like, what bracha do I make on something? Right? Does it make a difference? It does make a difference, but it's so complicated. What do I make on granola? What is granola anyway? And, you know, why does it have to be? What will determine? And these things happen. I eat multiple times a day. And that's a noble thought. And the person, first of all, has to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not expect you to be able to go from 0 to 60 immediately. Right? There are different ways to learn, and to learn on the practical level, and to learn on the deeper level, to learn, so to speak, down and dirty things that you have to do, and then behind that to start to learn the principles that will enable you to grasp the situations when they come up. But sometimes when we get into that mode, what we're not paying attention to is something that comes even more frequently than that. And that is what's called mitzvot bein adam l'chaveroh. The interpersonal mitzvahs, the mitzvahs of interactions. What do I say to this person? What don't I say to this person? What must I say to this person? How I deal with this other person's property, with their money. How I deal in relationships with neighbors, or with my employees, or with my employer, with my parents, with my siblings, with my kids. These things are there, even way more than you make brachas, even if you eat a lot. It's like, they're all the time. And how does one get up to speed on that? Why aren't we as frightened of it? Why is it that we're not as motivated to get up to speed on it? So one reason is that we usually tend to think in those things that we're okay. Right? Many times I've had the conversation with a person who kind of wants to apologize and explain, and they don't have to apologize to me, saying, you know, Rabbi, I don't really, you know, pay that much attention to the laws, what you call between man and God, you know, Shabbat or kosher, these things, but I'm very meticulous in the interpersonal laws in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. That's noble. Sometimes I'll ask the person, I say, how do you know? And there'll be this kind of silence. I'll say, I'm a good person. Okay, but what does that have to do with the Torah's mitzvot Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? What does the Torah say about all these situations? What you're saying is that you have a set of values that you've determined, and you may even be self-aware enough to say that I am consistent to my values in my interactions with people, but they may have nothing to do with what the Torah wants in our interactions with people. This is something that's kind of a shocker. We feel we're okay flying by the seat of our pants in interpersonal relations because we have some frame of reference we've received, sometimes from home, sometimes from society, sometimes from our own gut feeling, value judgments about how to interact. We can't do that when it comes to Shabbos because we don't have any points of reference there. We really feel we're flying blind. But hearing these things, we think we're okay. There are huge works written about mitzvot bein adam l'chaveiro. As many as there are fat books about the laws of Shabbos, there are huge fat books about those laws as well. And because we tend to usually think we're right and we're doing okay, so it's very hard for us to open our minds to even care about having other ways to look at it. Dale Carnegie wrote his famous book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, which is not really a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro book. It's really more of a sales book, right? It's a way of how you can kind of play your relationships with people in a way that will bring you success. And one of the things he says there is never criticize anybody. Right? Make that rule, never criticize anybody. Why? He says because most people feel that they're fine. And when you criticize them, you're messing with that. And nobody likes someone who messes with their feeling that I'm a good person. He gave a shocking example. He said Al Capone, the famous gangster, was once interviewed in prison. And he said, I still don't understand what people have against me. Like, you know, I was a tough businessman, it's true, but a good community member, a good family man. He really didn't think he was so bad that he had to be lined up there on death row. So a person feels that. Now the Torah guides us in a different way, right? One of the tools for acquiring Torah is to be ohevet atochachot, actually to be on the level that a person would love criticism. That's hard. That comes really from caring enough about the area you're developing in that when the person points something out to you, you appreciate it. Right? Imagine a ball player whose baseball player has gone into a slump. He's just not hitting the ball. And suddenly somebody tells him, we'll explain baseball again to the other people afterwards, the non-Americans. So somebody points out to him, I've been watching the films, you started dipping your elbow a little bit at the beginning of your swing. That was when the slump started. And he changes it and he starts hitting the ball. He would hug and kiss that guy. Why? He's criticizing you. He's telling you, hey, you're not doing that right. You got to change. But he cares so much about hitting the ball and the fat salary and the picture on the Wheaties box and the endorsements and all those things afterwards that that is a beautiful thing to him as opposed to difficult. So our tendency to think that we're right hampers us in even caring enough to try to see what the Torah would have to say about the interactions of Bein Adam LaChaveru. Now, once a person does care enough, you start to think, why is the Torah's advice any better than anyone else's advice? If you start to go to Amazon and you flip into your self-help section, there are a gazillion books about relationships and about dealing with your boss and dealing with your employee and dealing with your parents and dealing with your sister and dealing with everybody. And isn't the main thing if it works? If it works, if your relationship goes well, so then that's the right thing to do. But the Torah is dealing with it in a different level. That level is a functional level, and it can come under that category of Yesh Chochma Bagoyim Tamin, there can be wisdom among the nations, and believe it and use it and utilize it. But the Torah is coming from a different place. Why? Maharsha Shiva explained a fascinating anomaly that we have in the two tablets. Right, at Matan Torah, those two luchos, those basically divide up. The first one having to do with Bein Adam LeMakom, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Zocher Siyom HaShabbos Sukkatcho. The second one having to do with interpersonal things, Lo Tignov, Lo Tinaf, Lo Tachmod. Why is it that number 5 on the first tablet, Kabed Es Avicha Ves Imecha, honor your father and mother, why is that on the one that seems to be the classification of between man and God, not between man and fellow man? So when you examine that and you look into our sources, our obligation to honor our parents is not based on payback. Right? There is certainly an aspect of payback. One of the most foundational midos, character attributes, a person has to work on is hakarat hatov, recognizing, acknowledging the good that was done to you, and expressing that in real ways. But the Torah helps us define things oftentimes through extreme cases that you discover in Gemara, a lot of times cases that you don't even see how real they'll be, but they help you get at the principle. If someone was at birth given away to an orphanage, do they have an obligation of kibud av va'em to their birth parents? They do. They do. Now, if they had adoptive parents who gave them everything and everything they have, a tremendous obligation to honor them and have hakarat hatov to them. But that unique obligation of kibud av va'em is for those parents. Why? Why should I honor them? So what's explained is that there are shlosha shutfim ba'adam. There are three partners in the creation of a human. Father, mother, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the kavod, the honor of the parents, is linked to the honor of Hashem, of that creator. And because of that status, that they were the partners with Hashem in your creation, so that's why that particular honor is unique to them. So understanding this, Maharsha Shiva explained, is key before you move on to the world of Bein Adam LaChaveru. Bein Adam LaChaveru is not how to function in the jungle. It's not how to survive. It's not how to make life more workable or more pleasant. When you understand that you are dealing with creatures that were created in this partnership between two human beings and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then you have to realize that we're dealing with a creature of depth that we cannot access without the knowledge that the Torah gives us. Now, at the time I asked the Rosh Hashiva, I said, wait, but any creature is created that way. Right? When two monkeys mate and that forms the body of the monkey, whatever monkey soul goes in there is done by Hashem, so the two monkeys are partners with Hashem in the creation of the monkey. So he got somewhat upset with me. He says, that's exactly the difference. He says, there's a huge difference between creating, even if we'll say that the part that the parents add in is the physical aspect, a receptacle for the godly soul that goes in there is very different than creating the receptacle for the life force of the monkey. So if we have that and we can understand that, now we need to look to the Torah's wisdom to access these things. And many times it'll seem not intuitive to us to follow the guidance of the Torah in these relationships between people. One of the most common examples can be the whole concept of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, speaking ill of someone else. Very, very detailed halachas that Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen, the Chafetz Chaim, was famous for gathering from all of our sources and putting into that one book that he's known by, the Chafetz Chaim. And there, a person will say, okay, we have laws of slander in the world. Every country has laws of slander, but there's a huge difference. If I would write an article in the paper saying that, I don't know who I would pick, Rabbi Kloss, right, kicks puppies, right, repeatedly. And therefore Rabbi Kloss has his lawyer, right, bring a suit against me for libel, for slander. But when we come to court, I had my private detective film Rabbi Kloss drop kicking puppies across his backyard. So who wins the case? Right? I win the case because it was true. Lashon Hara by definition is something that's true. Lashon Hara by definition is something that's true. Something which is false is an entirely different level. Something called Motzi Shemra. Right? It's another level. But even things which are true and negative are often forbidden. Now wait, who's going to protect the puppies? Okay, the Torah has mechanisms for that as well. There are times and questions about what you tell and who you tell and how you tell, right? It's not something that leaves everything to go on and evil to come unchecked because you feel I can't say anything about anything. The point of the book that the Chofetz Chaim wrote is not just what you can't say, but in so many cases what you must say. It's not just holding back, but it's also those things that you can and should say, but you have to turn to the Torah's guidance in those things. That's one example. We saw a source for this in this past week's, or sorry, we'll see in this upcoming week's parasha. There's a discussion between Miriam and Aaron about their brother Moshe. Vatadaber Miriam v'Aaron v'Moshe. The topic of that is very hazy. It has to do with Moshe Rabbeinu's marriage. Chazal explained that Moshe Rabbeinu, unlike any other prophet in Am Yisrael's history, separated from his wife. And they had a discussion in private, his sister and his brother, about the fact that he had separated from his wife. Miriam was punished with the tzaraat, a disease that appears on the skin because of this. Right, Chazal point out Aaron as well, though it was not mentioned in the pasuk explicitly. Now, the Chofetz Chaim points out that the Torah later in Sefer Devarim says we must remember this. There's a pasuk which the Ramban explains is an imperative to remember every day. Right? Zachar zasher asa Hashem Elokecha leMiriam. Remember what was done to Miriam. Why? So he points out, right, that Miriam was so devoted to Moshe Rabbeinu. She was a great tzaddikus, right? And again, when we're looking at the Torah stories of people on this level, we have to understand also that they were held accountable for subtleties that perhaps sometimes we wouldn't be. This is a principle called HaKadosh Baruch Hu Medakdik Im Tzaddikov Kechut HaSara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very exacting with those tzaddikim in something that's even a hair's breadth. So here, she loved Moshe Rabbeinu. She endangered herself to help him, to save him, if you remember the stories in Shmos. And here she wasn't saying something outwardly negative about him, but she compared him to the other prophets. And therefore she was having this talk with Aaron about how she couldn't understand his behavior. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't mind this at all. The Torah puts in this fascinating pasuk in the middle of the story saying, after they spoke, Va'ish Moshe anav mod mikol adam asher al pnei adamah. Moshe was more humble than any human on the face of the earth. It was not that he was upset. Nonetheless, despite that, she was punished. So here, it's puzzling. And this, I was learning with a couple of guys, this piece in the Chofetz Chaim. So he brings later on, why does this not fall under the category of what's called to'elet? Positive purpose. A lot of times when you're speaking with someone, if there's a positive, tangible benefit, which is here to protect someone from danger, or to help someone else, to help someone work out a problem, and you're speaking to an appropriate person who can help with that, so that's allowed. And many times mandatory. So here, his sister saw something going wrong in his marriage, as she saw it. She was speaking with his brother about this topic. Why wouldn't that be considered speaking for a positive purpose? So the Chofetz Chaim explains, because there's a flowchart here. And in the flowchart, the first step had to be ladun et chavero lekaf zchut. The Torah guides us in Bein Adam LaChavero, and this is another level in which the Torah is different from what we find out there in the world, not just in what we do to people, not just in what we say about people, but what we think about people. To judge someone favorably, to look at the person and to say, it's true, I don't understand their actions, but maybe I'm not seeing something here, maybe things are different, maybe I'm not understanding the whole picture. It doesn't mean to be foolish, right? One of my teachers once said, if you see someone, you know, trying to open your neighbor's window with a crowbar and he has a ski mask on, don't think, well, maybe it's his brother-in-law and he lost his keys and he's got a skin condition, or is that right? You can call the police. Right? It doesn't mean to be stupid. But here, Miriam, because she didn't judge Moshe Rabbeinu favorably to that extent, that there was something here that she was not seeing, there was a factor in his decision that she didn't see. When a person is then speaking within the world that you created of judging unfavorably, to'elet, positive goals don't help. Then the negativity remains negative because you weren't supposed to enter that world in the first place. You took a wrong turn in the judging. So here we can see the subtle world of how these halachas Bein Adam LaChavero work. That it's something that a person really has to be able to try and see and delve and to understand the way the Torah views these things and knows how to do. So, this can get us kind of scared, right? The Torah, the Chofetz Chaim points out in the beginning of his book, the point of entering these halachas is not to paralyze you, right? He says the Yetzer Hara will first try the tactic, right, to get you to think, Lashon Hara is not a big deal. Once you've read some of the sources he brings and you see it is a big deal, so the Yetzer Hara will try to say, okay, so follow the book if you don't want to have a life, if you never want to speak with anyone or interact or succeed socially, follow the book. They say, the legend is, the story is, they say that's why the Chofetz Chaim spoke a lot. He wanted to show people there was lots of kosher talking you could do. The option is not to become, right, a person who has a vow of silence. That's not what the Torah wants, and we would lose so many of the things that we're supposed to do. And this brings us to an interesting riddle about this idea of Lashon Hara. Our desire for Lashon Hara is puzzling. It's puzzling. The Chofetz Chaim brings in his list of things that we can transgress when we're habitual Lashon Hara speakers, is lo techal, is not to create what's called the Chilul Hashem. Why is Lashon Hara particularly Chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name? Because something which the Torah has forbidden to us that involves our physical desires, if a person gives in to his physical desires, it's understandable. In other words, that's part of your human condition. The Torah says you should not eat a certain food. Right? That day you were really, really hungry and you gave in and you ate it. Okay, we understand how a person is made up. Right, you have the olfactory sensors, your nose smelled it, right? Your taste buds could taste it, you started watering, the hormones were going, sending all the hunger signals, and you went in and that satisfied that need. He said, Lashon Hara, speaking ill of someone, or accepting, believing that which other people tell you about someone, again, something which the Western world does not have a concept of in terms of what's forbidden. So there, What tangible benefit are you getting? So we all have the question in our head, and sort of, who's the Chavetz Chaim kidding? Did he not know how yummy it is when you know a secret about somebody? You got the dirt on someone and you can tell somebody? That is like, you know, this tremendous thing. You feel like you're going to explode if you don't tell somebody. Or if you know something happened and you don't know what it is, and somebody knows and you really want to know, and then they finally tell you, ah. So again, the reason that's so bad is because that's not coming from any physical place. That's not coming from our human condition. That's coming from evil. That's coming from evil, which we do have inside of ourselves as well. And that is a total give-in to evil. Now, this has been a battle for us throughout history. It's one of the reasons, as the Chavetz Chaim points in, out in the beginning, for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Why is it so hard to drop it? Why is it so hard to drop it? Right? The Chavetz Chaim brings reasons why he wrote his book. Part of it was, he said there was no centralized source for it. It was discussed in many different places in the Talmud, certain places in the Rishonim, the Rambam, Rabbeinu Yonah, some of the responsa, but he says because there was no book that centralized it there and brought all the sources and brought the halachas in an orderly way, he felt that's why people just didn't pay attention to it. They thought it's simply a nice character trait for extra holy people. So he wrote the book. And the book was written in Hebrew, but it was translated into English. And if the English translation is hard, there are different forms of the book that give you summaries and examples and stories, and you can get little nuggets of the laws of Lashon Hara on your phone, and Chavetz Chaim magnets to put on your refrigerator, and Chavetz Chaim lunchboxes for your kids to take to school, and everything about the Chavetz Chaim, and we still do it, right? Why? What is our draw? What is so powerful? So I have a theory, and I think there's something to it. Human beings are meant to be powerful. When you look at the description of the creation of humans, that we're meant to rule, to be powerful. A human being is a very powerful person. Now, we're not powerful in our muscles compared to other members of the animal kingdom on the planet. We're not the fastest, we're not the strongest, we don't have great claws, we don't have great canine teeth, but, right, we do have our minds, and we do have a very advanced power of speech. Now, when a person has power, they're loath to give up power. Right? Without getting into the politics of it, everybody knows there's a lot of discussion about gun control in the States, and one of the very powerful lobbies is the National Rifle Association. And there, one of their famous slogans was, "The only way you'll get that gun from me is when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers." Nobody talks that way about their toaster. Right, there's some kind of relationship with that gun. Why? Because if any one of you would stand up right now with a loaded handgun, I would give you tremendous respect. You'd be a very important person in this room. Extremely. Therefore, for a person to have the ability to have such power handy and to give it away is not easy. There's a curse in the Torah. Oro makereo baseter. Cursed is the one who strikes his friend in hiding. Chazal explained this refers to Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is the ultimate weapon. You can take a person down without him ever knowing it. Everyone has license to carry. You go out there, it's concealed carry. Nobody sees it. But suddenly a person realizes nobody wants to be friends with him anymore. Suddenly a marriage is broken up. A person's fired from a job. All sorts of things happen. You have that power. Everyone has that power. It's a great temptation. The Chavetz Chaim points out when a person wants to take revenge, the easiest way of revenge, spread a rumor, right? Destroy the person's character. It's there, and a person is loath to give up power. So what is the answer for this? And I think really the game changer for our interaction with all mitzvos bein onam lachaveru. The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Mavis v'chaim biyad haloshon." Death and life are in the hands of the tongue. We tend to always focus on the negative. When we enter the world of Bein Adam LaChavero, we start thinking, okay, so I can't insult this person, I can't speak bad about this person. But what are you supposed to do with that magnificent power of speech that you have? The Pasuk says it's true, death can be in the hands of the tongue. By saying something, you can kill a person. But Chaim Be'ad HaLoshon, with your words, you can bring someone to life. Be powerful. Use the power, develop the power, access the power, but do it for life, not for death. what you can do to a person, for a person, with a word, can be a life changer. If you believe it has that power in the negative, imagine what power it has in the positive. Rabbi Victor Miller, that's how, pointed out that people sometimes want to do chesed, want to do kindness to people, but we say, what can I do? I'm limited in my means. I don't know if you ever play like fantasy lottery. What would I do if I won the Powerball? Right? You see that jackpot there, $763 million. So right away you say, okay, they're going to take off 40% for taxes, right? This, that, okay, you still have a nice pot to work with. What am I going to do? Okay, air conditioners in the Chappelle's dorm, number one, right? That's happening tonight, right? Moving on from there, right, we'll have our gym and our swimming pool, and meanwhile you're helping out all sorts of wonderful things around the world, the sick and the poor and the needy, and you're doing great stuff, and you have a nice time fantasizing, but you didn't even buy a ticket. Everyone has a mouth. Everyone has the power of words. Words are able to bring life to a person. The beautiful word in Hebrew for encouragement is le'oded. It comes from the word od, which means more. With your words, you can make someone more. Just as in the negative words, you can diminish the person's self. Here you're able to bring a person to life. It's a type of chesed everyone can do. And he points out it's such a chesed that everyone needs. The money, somebody may be wealthy enough, he doesn't need me to toss him $1 million. But sometimes that person who's wealthy more than others needs a kind word that he can really believe is sincere and that people mean towards him and not towards his money. So if we can shift the focus on this in our interactions, true, knowing what negative things we shouldn't do, but use that as a symbol for what power we have, and then to try to focus on what we can do with these things. And that's the point of remembering the Maisa of Miriam. Not just to be careful what we don't do, but realize how powerful we are, and to harness that for the good, and to bring life to everyone. It starts with judging people favorably instead of negatively. To be able to try and harness the power of our mind, Rabbi Sol Salanter once said, why did Hashem give people the power of what's called a kruma cup? A kruma cup means twisted reasoning, right? We can all have some very twisted reasoning sometime. He says so that you will use it to judge others favorably, right? I always use this example. You ever go to the supermarket and you get online in the 10 items express line and you see that guy up there and you're counting the things in his cart? Yeah, 17 items. 17 items. What does he think? What, you know, somebody's got to do something, and you're like seething. And then one day you went to the supermarket, you're in a big rush, and your wife said that, you know, your kid ran out of diapers and there's a big problem at home because of that. And you tossed in the diapers and she said, we need milk for supper, we need this. And you have there and you go and you see the lines on the regular lines, these huge heaping carts, right? And your phone's ringing, you're under pressure. So suddenly you do this math. Okay, all those dairy things, dairy's one item, right? You do this magic, dairy's one item, fruit's one item, right? Suddenly, you know, 27 items have become four, you're on the line, you know, and then somebody dares to say something to you. Excuse me, this is an express. Okay, right, okay, this is not a lot. Express doesn't mean, it doesn't mean 10. You don't have to be so literal. It's not a lot, right? 10 is, in Judaism, I'm Jewish, Judaism, 10 represents a multiple, a many, right? This is still a multiple, it's still a many, it's not 100. You know, 100 would have another zero. This is within the tens. 27 is within the tens family of things. I'm okay, right? And we got it, and we feel okay, right? So we have that ability to do that when it comes to ourselves. If we can take that, and that's part of the Vahavta L'Recha Kamocha that we learned about, that self-love that we have, we can use that to fuel the energy to think well of others, to speak well of others, to bring life to others, then we'll be able to keep our power, build our power, embrace our power, and have HaKadosh Baruch Hu love us and be proud of us for it.